Blog Talk Radio.
You know, the day destroys the night, night divides the day.
Hello and welcome to Break On Through. Here you can travel realms uncharted, blur the lines, break the chain, open yourself to possibilities waiting to be discovered on the other side. I am Pam Ray. With me is my co-host, Intimidus Rex. Rex and I are poets on a website called All Poetry with a group of poets called Late Night Poets. You don't have to belong to the group or the website to call in, to share, to listen and enjoy, but it is highly recommended. And also make sure to check out poetry anthologies put out by Late Night Poets on Amazon, because when you purchase those, you not only get amazing poetry, you help support these radio shows. And hello, Rex. How's it going?
What's good? All right.
Awesome. Awesome. You know what? I am doing great. Looking forward to hanging out with you, maybe some other cool poets, and, you know, delving into tonight's poetry, as always. You know, it's a little chilly, but you know what? I'm not going to complain because life could be a heck of a lot worse, and all that good stuff, you know?
Yep.
It's all good. And for tonight, we do have a few carryovers. And then our main topic, though, is that we have poetry inspired by two poems by Carl Shapiro, which is Manhole Covers and A Garden for Chicago, or A Garden in Chicago. I can't remember. One of the two, something like that. But, it's going to be an awesome night of poetry. I think Stelina must think it's Wednesday night or something. I don't know what's going on there. Oh, my goodness gracious. Good to see Stelina on the board. As always, appreciate her support.
Okay.
Got a whole lot of dancing going on there. And, definitely good to hear you as always, Rex. And, all right. So, let's go ahead and things started. And what do you have for us first, Rex?
Wild Pink Orchid by Betty Page. That was yours.
All right. Sounds good. Wild Pink Orchids by Betty Page. Soft, delicate pink, subtle, voluptuous curves. Tropical orchids, swiftly paintbrush strokes. Across a creamy white page, precise glowing lines. Caressing as pearls, bubbly as waves of seafoam, glistening sunlight. Pristine, wild, carefree, splashing vivid hot pink hues, passionately blends, swirling, twirling pinks, divine, intimate love's kiss, aromatic, sweet, highly addictive, finest, spectacular art displayed in windows, Santa Cruz coastline, bohemian gypsy rose, lover's stroll by sea, picking pineapples, watermelons, strawberries, at farmer's market, carnival rides, spin, merry-go-round melodies, fading in distance, searching for treasures, jewelry, gemstones, silver, gold, diamond wedding rings, decorating home, getting lost in galleries, picking out new art, beach boardwalks, boutiques, souvenir shops, beach cafes, sipping on hot teas, dazzled in windows, found her, she's so beautiful, perfect scenery, enamored, smitten, added to our collection, hot pink wild orchids, and poem. And what a beautiful write by Betty, wonderful imagery throughout, and Rex, let's hear your thoughts.
Well, those first six stanzas are the end result of, because number seven hits on that idea of walking Santa Cruz. Oh, Santa Cruz coastline, bohemian gypsy rose, love a stroll by sea. The first six stanzas are the end result, sitting along with that last enamored, smitten, added to our collection, hot pink wild orchids. So she's already, the window shopping mood set is already gone in the first six stanzas. Then the offering comes from then on down, where and when and what they were doing at that moment. So Santa Cruz, farmer's market, carnival rides, walking along the shore, taking in window shopping, so to speak. And there it is, that one picture that sparks the whole thing, those first six stanzas.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, I do like how she takes us through this journey of discovery. As you said, the leading us to the point where they find that picture. And I like how, you know, that this is about that, finding that piece of artwork that really speaks to you. And finding those moments and those simple things that really bring you joy. I like her, as always, her attention to detail, even how she brings in picking pineapples, watermelons, strawberries at farmer's market, carnival rides, spin, merry-go-round melodies fading in distance. So it's not just about the shopping painting. It's about everything that happens in that day and those pleasures that you get out of life. And so excellent, excellent write and very well done. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
Back Then by After the Fire. We used to make our patterns in the sand, and played with Hot Wheels cars for hours each day. Back then, we were a merry little band. Those memories will never fade away. We played with G.I. Joes out in the woods until our moms would call us home at night. I missed the boys from my old neighborhood who played outside until the day's twilight. We battled with our cap guns and our sticks that we were pretended were the sharpest swords and suffered the mosquitoes and the ticks. Back then, the gains alone were our rewards. Sleepovers had us bringing in the dawn. It's so sad many childhood friends are gone. And Tom.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And such a beautiful modern sonnet by After the Fire. You know, as always, on a technical level, it's just spot-on poetry. I really love the nostalgia in this. It's beautiful. It's heartfelt. It's a nostalgic write on remembering those good times with childhood friends. And the first line, the first few lines stand well on their own, but it's that ending couplet. And I think it's important with a sonnet form. That ending couplet to be particularly strong. And it speaks volumes on the idea of looking back and realizing of as we go through time, so many friends from our childhood are lost, either to death or just because of drifting apart. And there definitely is an emotional impact in that ending couplet, which I really like. And I also really liked, we battle with our cap guns and our sticks that we pretended were the sharpest swords and suffered the mosquitoes and the ticks. Back then, the games alone were our rewards. I feel like that really speaks on how times have changed and you know, how children back then used their imaginations and sticks and, you know, accepted that you didn't get, you know, rewarded to play. Playing in itself was what was fun, what was the reward. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Oh, a couple. Back then, you couldn't keep us in the house. And these days, you can't get them out of the house because they're always playing games, computer games. Not actually physical, no physicality involved, no imagination, no thought or expenditure of energy and romping. Just sitting, playing games on a computer, which is kind of a sad note to where childhood gone because you're supposed to have that exercise, that fun, that delivery system of extending your energy outside where, hey, there's vitamins to be had as well as the fun in the games itself. But this also hits on that note of as one ages, the older you get, the less people around that you once knew who are still alive.
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's a really good point you make. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's great for people to have knowledge of computers, but sometimes and like electronics, but you know, it takes away from, as you were saying, the idea that children need to be outside and need to be playing. So great comment. And what do we have next?
Another Place to Bounce My Ball by Jule Buck.
All right. Another Place to Bounce My Ball by Julie Buck. One day when I knew it all, I fell from what religious people call grace. Another day when I knew nothing, I rose up into knowing about me. Yesterday, just for fun, I didn't take my meds. I felt no better, no worse, and had no fun, not even temporary. Tomorrow, just to escape, I may get drunk. I did. The hangover was a bitch, and there was no escape, not even temporary. Someday, when I know just the right amount, I will not only have found balance, but another place to bounce my ball, perhaps permanently. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
terminality. I thought of not taking the meds. It's on the idea of being zoned and not feeling and wanting to feel. Felt no better, no worse, had no fun. That's because the effects of the meds hadn't worn off, so you couldn't notice a difference, not even temporary. Tomorrow, just to escape, I may get drunk. I did. The hangover was a bitch, and there was no escape, still no feeling. And someday, when I know just the right amount, I will not only have found bounce, but another place to bounce my ball. Perhaps permanently, I kind of hit the idea of actually walking over the edge itself in order to feel something.
I like that. I like that. Great observations there. Yeah, I thought this was an excellent write on life has that up and down and the learning experience. But also, as you were saying, it kind of speaks on the idea of mental illness and medication, and just, as you said, about the end, walking over the edge. I always enjoy and appreciate seeing how people take abstract or surrealism art in different directions. I also feel like the first couple of lines really, to me, speak on the idea of learning to think for yourself and getting to know yourself and know what works for you and what doesn't. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
If Those Pretty Lies Come Near Me, Then I Shall, by Jim Bellamy. If those pretty lies come near me, then I shall summon death for skies. Oh, if coated city then me, then I will ride and a bay of bone brawls after cell mines. Once inside a stave, I sweated after swine. Ah, a peach of plum peel, lemon and thymes, dollop tape on crossed eyes. And I heard heroes jeering at fast mines. Eager eaters of Japan cry for sun grimed. Evil God, and God is freed, and God is slimed. The dog day dollar of dune man drugs, easy liars with eaten lugs. Oh, as faces think of a swung jam then, old clocks click where dolly women drop dead. Ah, we have the names by heart. Old men sweat cold glass as we summon dollars from British glass, and we are dodged order mills. And we are swabbed under hills, and we will listen out for windmills. Ah, the digger of dangers drops the pears underneath graded killer cadavers, masks melt for pillars, and we arouse rivers when we see a flask. Drown no more, eaters of sadness, starve. And poem.
Great read there, Rex. Like I always say, you know, I just enjoy your voice connected with Jim Bellamy's poetry. It just works as a great combination. I had to give this one the gold with this Break On Through contest. He just plays with phrasing, imagery, and metaphors so well. A wonderful use of a surreal and experimental style. Strong imagery and metaphors that offers up plenty of food for thought. I really like that. For some reason, this spoke to me, and I know there's other thoughts in here too. It's a very layered write, but it spoke to me on the idea of those who live for drama and create it for their own satisfaction. I really like, once aside a stave, I sweated after swine, ah, peach, a plum peel, lemon and thyme, dollop tape on crossed eyes. And I heard heroes jeering at fast minds. Eager eaters of Japan cry for sun-grimed evil God, and God is freed, and God is slimed. The gritty, raw, gritty, and nearly the religious imagery in this, you know, to me just really powerful. I also really like the diggers of danger drops the path underneath grated killer cadavers, mask melts for pillars, and we arouse rivers when seas of flasks. I feel like that definitely speaks on history and a history of violence that can easily be either buried and forgotten or stirred up. So excellent write and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
I'm going to hit on lies, that first line. So I'm going to hit on the idea of the lies we tell ourselves because something isn't going right in our lives. And it hits that with the back end of this. Drown no more, eaters of sadness, starve. The idea of quit emoting lies in order to cover up the truth that you don't want to tell yourself or admit to yourself because you can't stand the sight of it or yourself.
I like that. And I like how you brought up the idea, you know, of, I knew what I was going to say 5 seconds ago, but I forgot. So I apologize for that. All I know, Rex, is that while you were commenting, I really thought that was an awesome comment. And so very cool. Very cool. And that's why I shouldn't try to talk and type at the same time. Thoughts go in one ear and out the other. All right. So what do you have for us next?
Smile by Cassia F. Yours.
Yep. Smile by Cassia F. I can see you, canvas still blank, pacing around the loft, thoughts shining light, picking up the brush, molding the colors together, strokes slow and steady, emotions run deep, vibrancy of choices dance on the canvas, more red bear passion flows, nature glows. I imagine pure light, doors to leaves vibrate my hand, take over in completeness, whole being flies, emotions inside, exposed outside. I adore the feel of paint on my fingers, the outcome of my thoughts. As poets say, let it flow. Words or color is all the same. My eyes capture in my art, I smile, and poem. Beautiful write by Cassia F. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, she bites on the idea of creation, so she might know something about painting itself. Canvas still blank, pacing around the loft, thoughts, shining light. The idea of digging into the mind itself, and then something arises. Pick up the brush, choice in colors, the dance, a little bit more red to offer up passion, and doors to leaves vibrate. My hand takes over in completeness. That offers up doors to leaves vibrate. That's the thought of the mind itself. And then the whole being flies, emotions inside, exposed outside, the temporal angle of envisionment exposed. Nicely done.
It really is, and great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I like the emotional impact of this write, the imagery and metaphors. I like how it speaks on the emotional experience of watching the artist interact with the canvas, you know, and even the idea of watching the poet interact with the blank page and bringing forth that poetry. I really like more red bear passion flows, nature glows. I imagine pure white doors to leaves vibrate. My hand takes over in completeness. Whole being flies, emotions inside, exposed outside. the wonderful write on, like I said, the interaction between the artist and the canvas and the artist and the paint, and how that experience is just brought to life with a depth of emotion. So excellent write and very well done. All right, what do we have next?
Let's see, we've got Grounded by Pretty Bird. Oh, shorty. Each breath frozen in the midst of what once was freedom, where warm skin ran pearls at a sigh. Time makes the branches brittle and its core delicate, interwoven memories locked in desiccated lace stand still. Losing the now for the then, snapshots captured in broken twigs in the shape of us in once upon a time fugacity, frozen in the midst of what once was freedom. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I really like where Pretty Bird took this artwork. Well, first of all, it's great to see her. I haven't seen her for a while, so very cool that she was inspired. This is definitely shorter than I usually see from her, but it has such power to it in its word choices, its imagery, and metaphors. I really like how this speaks to me on memories of what once was beautiful and loving, and then be transformed into something else. And it's not just beautiful and loving, but because it's so important that she repeats the idea of what was once freedom. You know, it feels like the idea of being able to at one time be true to yourself, and then falling away from that because of the way life has broken you. I like this all the way through, but particularly time makes the branches brittle and the core delicate, interwoven memories locked in desiccated lace stand still. Beautiful lines and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Time and age. You look at the disparity between the two. You got the healthy one on the bottom, that single here, touch of breath, and it's broad, it's expansive, it's rich. And you look at the top one, which offers up as brittle. It is. It shows the length of time drawn between the two, which could be just a moment in time, but could also walk the thought of years itself. The idea of capturing like a snowflake, a single moment of breath in molecular form, and offering up the life that walks between it.
Very cool. Great observation there. I like that. The thought of the aging and the way it affects the body and the mind. Cool. And what do you got next, Rex? So what do we got next?
We have True Art by Miriam Kilmer.
All right. True Art by Miriam Kilmer. I remember seeing an oriental rune matted, encased in an elaborate frame, and hanging in a formal exhibition. On closer inspection, the rune turned out to be a crushed and grimy chiclet box. That's what being an artist means to me, recognizing beauty in an odd or everyday object and rubbing it in their faces. And poem. How did we get to this poem?
It's the next one down.
I mean, it's a great poem. Oh,
did
okay. I must,
right.
No, I guess I must have put it in the wrong spot, but no, it's good. It's a good poem. And And what do you, what's your cut? I'm sorry. My apologies. I was thrown off.
Get your shit together. The hell you got lost?
Yeah, well, it was just that I lined the poems up to fit with the prompt they were inspired by. And so I think I must have put this in the wrong spot because it was supposed to be inspired by a garden in Chicago, I think. So, but that's okay. That's all right. So
no,
what's your thoughts,
Rex? It says inspired by manhole covers.
Oh, does it? Oh, okay. Okay. Ah.
Okay.
Oh, you're right. It was. Never mind. Okay. Very cool. All right. Your thoughts, Rex?
Well, she uses rune with Oriental up top, and you don't really think of runes as part of something from to eat the Far East, so to speak. But I get the idea. It's something a little bit different, something to frame the mind around. And that second stanza hits on that. That rune turned out to be a crushed and grimy chicklet's box, which kind of opens up a note to something odd in itself. You don't find chicklets anymore, which is something. But that last stanza, that's what being an artist means to me, recognizing beauty in an odd or everyday object and rubbing it in their faces. It's a kind of note to, y'all don't know shit, so I might just give you shit to prove you don't know shit, and you can all fuck off. Because you're all going to say it's beautiful and not know a damn thing. It's the idea of, you know what, flubbing off the people who think they are such such lovers and such notators of what great art is, but they're really rubes.
I like that thought. That actually, yeah, your comment had me laughing. I enjoyed that because, you know, oftentimes there is that idea of if the right person says that something is art, you know, it becomes art. And, you know, as you said, that telling off of people who think they're experts. Yeah, I did like her use of the word ruin. I also like how this speaks on the idea of as the end line say, recognizing beauty in an odd or everyday object. You know, that thought that, you know, beauty and art can be found anywhere. You know, wonderful, wonderful brevity, great imagery. It makes me think of the beginning with encased in an elaborate frame and hanging in a formal exhibition. It makes me think of some of the Dadaism art, like the lobster phone or the toilet, the kind of kind of art where it causes a lot of conversation on what exactly is art and what isn't and where do we draw the line. So excellent write and very well done. All right, what do we got next?
Impressions of Someone Who Can No Longer Draw a Straight Line by Oak Blue 34. Double white line runs down the middle of my street. Where they begin, I don't know. Don't know where they end, but maybe they go to infinity at both ends. Lines are scuffed with old tire marks, but after tomorrow's forecasted rain, they'll be clean and shiny, except where time has chipped the paint. At the end of the block, the lines disappear at the crosswalk, starting again at the other side of the intersection and another crosswalk. Pattern repeated at the end of each block and intersection. On my block, lines even go right across the manhole cover. Makes me wonder about the skills of the people man on the line drawing machine that came through last year. As they stopped and started is a paint. Also makes me wonder how they get the line straight, block after block. Maybe GPS guides the truck as it drives down the street. For one day, and no more, I'd like to be the woman on the machine that draws the lines from here to infinity. I'd like to press the lever that starts the flow of paint at the right spot, sprays the paint in straight lines, ends it abruptly at each right moment, gets to smile at the end of the day as her handiwork and the thought that her lines are straight, with no overlaps with crosswalks, and drivers are safer because of her efforts. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. Wonderful write by Oak Blue. You know, I like his straightforward style with this, how he brings us into his personal thoughts. And, you know, I never thought about it. It's one of those things you take advantage that how straight oftentimes those lines are. I can imagine that if I was the woman driving the paint, that there would just be zigging and zagging and squirrely cues all over the place. I like that this is that tribute to that person who paints those straight lines and the pondering upon how they come into existence. And as I was mentioning, how we often take them for advantage. I really like this all the way through, but especially, you know, the description in the third stanza and the where he says at the end, you know, where it says, gets to smile at the end of the day at her handiwork and the thought that her lines are straight with no overlaps, the crosswalks and drivers are safer because of her efforts. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Rex, your thoughts?
It's an illusion. It's all about the illusion because at the end of the day, she's not going to make her lines any straighter than his because of how it's done. Most people don't realize unless you've actually seen it. You notice they only do the road one half at a time. And there's always that little spot where you come to the middle, where there's a dividing line between one half of the road and the other. And a double line, the walks up on the opposite of one side of that point in the middle of the road, and also on the other side of that point in the middle of the road. So you've got a demarcation line that walks with it. And it used to be, there used to be a guy on the back of the machine that pressed the button to make the lines. Now it's all computerized. But I like the thought running through this, because they're never really truly straight, because you got to depend on the operator driving. And if he's got glasses, then you might have a little nodule of erratic. And when you're driving, you don't really notice, because the lines always look the same rolling into the distance.
That's a really good point. You're right. When driving, you wouldn't notice those little details. I remember seeing this picture one time. It was like a joke thing but it was a real picture of there was a dead animal in the middle of the road, and the paint line went on the road and over the dead animal and going. And it was like an example of complete laziness. And it just cracked me up. I like how Babbler says, not to mention the dude laying the asphalt might not have gotten it just right either. That is a good point there. That's a good point.
Well, they're pretty good about it. It's just that center of the middle of the road sometimes is a little quirk in the tar itself. But it does give them the point of demarcation for both sides. That line gets one line of each.
True. Well, I have to say, no matter what little imperfections I have, I truly appreciate that there are people out there doing that job, those jobs. So much appreciated, especially in the weather extremes that some areas can get. All right. What do we have next?
Grateful by Babla.
All right. Grateful by Babbler. I never schedule myself enough time to take a road trip at a leisurely pace, speeding across the country, shooting for the coastline, only stopping to sleep, eat, and pee, and tucked there beneath the 12-inch gap Americans love to hate and children often peek beneath in a fast food restroom is a nickel drain cover, a grid too orderly for a spider web, too exacting for free form, yet curved, directing yellow puddles, floods from toilet paper, basketball, turds into the drain system to be forgotten about, stamped through chief. I sit here upon the porcelain throne, wipe and a hand wash away from continuing my trek across the land of the free, wondering if this company who produces these metallic strainers separate the unclean from the cleanable, is owned or operated by natives, or if it's yet another thing we've claimed without permission. Logo war chief, complete with headdress regalia, arms folded in defiance, the face of a floor drain, stepped on, pissed on, ignored, sweeping away everything foul, much deeper than a proverbial rug, without even a nod, keeping America beautiful, taken for granted yet again. End poem. And wow, just absolutely amazing lines throughout by Babbler. And your thoughts, Rex?
That's taking literality for the auto joyride. We don't often think about the stampings that go on, especially a drain in the bathroom where the best bet is, hey, it's working. Because if it ain't, you're walking in that proverbial shit, so to speak. And this one's, yeah, it's an old drain because they don't make brass ones anymore. It's almost those cheap little flimsy steel ones that if you put your foot on it with enough weight, it bends in the middle, and then you're kind of screwed as well. But I do like this thought, and it's almost the thought sitting on the toilet actually pondering the angle as well as the name on the grid itself, because everybody's got to stop and take a pee or whatever else. And the idea, then rolling into that sort of allusions to other times, other destinies, and how things work in the world from one generation, well, not one generation, from one era into another, walking forward, and how things get lost and sometimes actually rebranded, although this might just be for the name of the it's named Sioux Chief because it comes from Sioux City, Iowa, and they're supposed to be chief and drains. But then again, that's probably the way it goes. Most people don't think about, hey, you know what, Sioux Chief at the drain. It kind of walks one way. And you think about it, does it really walk that way, or does it walk another way? It's pondering on the posse. Instead of reading the dirty scrolls on the panel wall that you're enclosed within.
Oh, my goodness. I like that thought there, Rex. And, yeah, you know, it really is about paying attention to the small details that we don't even – think about, and you know, those things that we just really take it for, you know, granted. And you know, I never even remember looking at a bathroom drain and remember seeing a word, like a label, but they've probably always been there. But other things, you know, like, you know, toilet paper in public bathrooms is often from, at least around here, from the company Kimberly-Clark. We have a town in Wisconsin that makes the manhole covers, like all other towns in Wisconsin. If you look at the manhole covers, and I can't remember the name of the town or the company, but you'll see that name. And so I really like that she brings that idea to thought. Very relatable, especially where she says, and tucked there beneath the 12-inch gap Americans love to hate, and children often peek beneath in a fast food restroom is a nickel drain cover. That is so true. Oh, my goodness. You really feel like you have, like, little to no privacy in some of those public restrooms with that huge gap. And it's not only children, you know, I mean, I don't know about anybody else, but if I can't, I sometimes have to just peek just enough to see if I can see feet, because, you know, but the power of this rite really comes through in the idea of how the thought on the native people and those ideas of things stolen from them. And I like how the end line, sweeping away every foul much deeper than a proverbial rug without even a nod, keeping America beautiful, you know, makes me think of that old commercial with the Native American, who actually the guy wasn't Native American, he was Italian. But, you know, it was that commercial where it was, you know, be against pollution. But really clever and thoughtful right throughout, focusing on the details of an everyday object and, you know, thinking about its meaning to us and to our country. So excellent write and very well done. And all right, what do we got next?
Metal Garbage Cans by Gilkey. Metal garbage cans are fading into obsolescence like plastic toy dinosaurs, rubbish of a halcyon past. Many a hardy, red-blooded American lad, snot-nosed, mucous membrane, chicken pox infected with the bravado of a clear blue sky, sun-high, picked up a garbage can lid, envisioned himself a chivalrous knight of the round table, broomstick in his right hand, heavy lid in his left. The heft of his imagination, the stray cats or dragons to slay. Peter, be not alarmed, they all scamper away. Flinging these lids like frisbees flying through the air with lack of grace or ease, they clang and rattle in dissatisfaction of the dull aim of the dullard, malcontent with his own aim, trying again to be Captain America across the Marvel movies. Everyone now has plastic lids or chained metal chains around the remaining metal lids, and the same snot-nosed kid grew up bred more children who really are not children, but pod people, glued to iPhones, tablets, and virtual reality games, so they never fling metal garbage cans or dirty their hands, muss up their hair, catch the common cold, or wipe their own noses. I could go on, but the zombie apocalypse is streaming, and I can't miss a second of this. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I'm really impressed with this write. It's another one that has great nostalgic value to it. Hard-hitting line. You know, it really speaks strongly on the past and, again, takes an everyday object and relates it to how things have changed, how childhood has changed. And, you know, to be honest, even though I noticed, it never really, even until I read this poem, never thought about the fact that, you know, the tin The metal garbage cans of my childhood have all but disappeared. But I really like this all the way through. Strong imagery and metaphors. I particularly like, where it says, about many a hardy, red-blooded American lad, snot-nosed, mucous membrane, chicken pox infected with the bravado of a clear blue sky, sun high, picked up a garbage can lid, envisioned himself a chivalrous knight. And then where it says, PETA, be not alarmed, or where it says, the stray cats are dragons to slay, PETA, be not alarmed, they all scamper off. Wonderful humor, wonderful poke at how people, too often, I think, overthink things. I also like that he brings in the mention of chicken pox, because it takes me back. It's weird to say, but there was a time where children were just, sent out to play. I remember me and my cousins and my siblings all having chicken pox. I'm not saying that's better or worse. I'm just saying that takes me back to that shared moment of suffering together. And again, he reminds us of, as he says, bred more children who really are not children, but pod people glued to iPhones, tablets, and virtual reality. Another strong point of this is the ending and the humor of, I could go on, but the zombie apocalypse is streaming and I can't miss a second of this. So it's that reminder that it's not just the children that have changed, but the adults as well as the expectations change. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Chicken pox. Kids gave me chicken pox at 37. Little bastards. Nasty. Anyway, well, the metal garbage cans is the kind of hint in this, as well as the nostalgia. It's as well as the thought coming to at note at the back end, the zombie apocalypse, and the nobody goes outside anymore. There's a disillusionment to the illusion of what once was, but now is the selling out, because it used to be we made everything ourselves. And it was made with strength to last. Now, metal's too expensive. Why? Because we sold out to everybody else. Plastic garbage cans. They're made in China. They're cheaper. So in order to keep that illusion of everything is still cheaper in America, well, yeah. If you're getting slave labor to do it in foreign countries and having it shipped back and it's still cheap to buy, yes, there's still an illusion there. But the illusion walks a different path because we're no longer doing what once was our birthright, which was creating everything the rest of the world wanted. We no longer go that route. And now that last stanza walking into the zombie apocalypse is streaming and I can't miss a second of this, hits on that bite that now everybody's sending their crap here and dumbing down this country to the point where we're no longer on the respected class because we buy into everybody else's bullshit.
Great comment, Rex. I like how you brought up the thought of, dumbing down this country and the respect that we're losing. So excellent comment. Very cool. All right. And what do we have next?
Acid Rain or Angel Tears by Poetic Creations. Or yours.
Okie dokie, Smokey. Acid Rain or Angel Tears by Poetic Creations. Rain gutters rose in neighborhoods to divert the shedding of angels' tears that shall never dampen the facial facade of snarling canyons again. Rusty teeth relentlessly gnash on scraps, flushed from blacktop graveyards down a wrecking, winding, monstrous vascular system of a mighty beast that exhales putrid, streaming vapors through a thick, frothy head of snow, throats plugged with dolphin-embossed sand script, keystone covers, silver-clad coins stampede in the heart of an era known as the Industrial Age. Rich patina like that of a gladiator-stained gladius rusting in morning dew, where wild iron mustangs roam racing and roaring with fumes venting, thundering firebirds fly by leaving top hats, quaking to break a silence. The murmuring of empty stomachs goes unheard and unnoticed underground, held in contempt by a massive body forged from iron, cement, and glass. End poem. And Rex, your thoughts?
Well, like the title, Acid Rain or Angel Tears, the bites of that which is. I remember, God, is it going back to the 70s. By 1980, we will be in a acid rain will kill off all the crops, and there will be droughts and famine across the world. Nicely stated thing that never happened, but still, love the scare tactics they put out back then and still continue to today. But back in this, I like the throats plugged with dolphin embossed Sanskrit keystone covers, silver-clad coins stamped in the heart of an era known as the Industrial Age, rich patina like that of gladiators, stained gladius rusting in morning dew. The note to manhole covers, I like that descriptive thought. This also hits on the idea of how we've come to the point where it's easier putting and stuffing people into large generated cities where nothing is fertile at all, except the need to go to work each day because, hell, you got to pay for that expensive life.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I like how this pays tribute to the manhole covers, but also speaks on the underground life of the sewer system, or even I feel like it speaks also on the idea of the subway system, especially in those end lines. Great use of imagery and some alliteration throughout. Beautiful flow to it. This powerful imagery that really brings to life the city and the life beneath the city. I especially like that exhales putrid steam and vapors through a thick frothy head of snow, throats plugged with dolphin embossed Sanskrit keystone covers, and then the murmuring of empty stomachs goes unheard and unnoticed underground. That makes me think on the whole idea of how oftentimes, you know, homeless people will seek shelter in the sewers or in the subway, and, you know, the idea of how easy it is to cover up the problems that exist in a big city. So powerful, right, and very well done.
Because you got to put something. Everything works under the city. That's where the water lines go, the electric lines, the gas lines. And you'll notice you get a real problem with a big city when it comes to gas lines. Those manhole covers blow off.
You know what? That is a really good.
Those things at 150 pounds apiece, oof, they do a lot of damage.
Yeah, that is a really good point there. Wow. And that is heavy. That is. Wow. Man, but must take at least a couple guys or more to lift those up.
Usually two. They got a special pry bar for you. And when the and you know that when the president comes to town, they weld those man covers shut.
Okay. Well, yeah, that makes sense because that's why they have the giant, what do you call those things? That, not screws, bolts, right? They have giant bolts that hold them down?
Nope. They're weighty enough. You don't need the bolts. I'm telling what they really do when president comes to those cities, they actually weld those manhole covers in place.
Ah, okay. I see. Very cool. New fact to learn. Awesome. All right. What do we got next?
The Medallions of Cities by Asad Mehmood. Manhole covers, round and true, dark iron disc, a glimpse of the crew that keeps our streets and sewers bright, a symbol of the city's might. Like ancient shields of warriors bold, protecting all from the tales untold of monsters lurking in the depths, a barrier between the real light, real and myth, a medallion of modern times, a portal to the subterranean chimes, of pipes and wires that make us thrive, a reminder of this city alive, a coin of the urban realm, the underworld's silent helm, an unassuming yet noble sight, a harbinger of the city's light. A tale untold, a sacrifice so great, of lives lost to the underworld's fate. Without these covers, many more to follow, falling into the depths, never to return tomorrow. Yet these iron shields, they do part their part, preventing tragedies, saving lives from the start. Their silent strength, a beacon of hope, protecting all as they quietly cope. End poem.
Great read there, Rex. I thought this was a wonderful rhyming poem. Asad Mehmood is new to me, and I'm glad, always glad to see new name, and I look forward to reading more of his poetry and hope he's inspired to, you know, share more with us. Great rhyming poem. I really like how he calls the manhole covers a medallion of modern times, and pays tribute to them and the purpose they serve in being able to, you know, keep that separation, keep the people from falling in. That's why I like the end lines. Yet these iron shields, they do their part, preventing tragedy, saving lives from the start. Their silent strength, a beacon of hope, protecting all as they quietly cope. I also feel like that could also work on a metaphorical level, on the idea of those people like, you know, police and first responders that go unnoticed until they're needed. Another great line is, a coin of the urban realm, the underworld silent helm, an unassuming yet noble sight, a harbinger of the city's light. Again, we have lines on remembering the importance of something which can so easily be forgotten. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Oh, it's a different look at on a number of levels with the thought of the manhole covers themselves. He offers up manhole covers, ancient shields, medallions, the coin of the realm, a tale untold. So he drops in a little bit of something different with each stanza. Thought the first one, keeping the sewers, streets and the sewers bright, symbol of city's might. The thought of the second one drops in hiding that which lurks below. People think of the sewers in New York. You always hear those urban myths of 12-foot alligators that roll through the pipes because people bought baby alligator, got too big, flushed down, now it lurks. than what I hit on with the last one, a medallion of modern times, a portal to subterranean chimes, of pipes and wires that make us thrive. And then the coin kind of hits on the idea of wealth for the city, but also the underworld, because then he gets into the underworld. A tale untold, a sacrifice subgrade of lives lost to the underworld's fate. Without these colors, many more to follow, falling into the depths, never to return tomorrow. That hits on the idea of the birth of the city itself. You need those underground realms. The thought of the boring machines to create the tunnels for the subways, not to mention everything else that goes along with it, the sewer lines, the pipes and everything else that goes into making a city itself. And then he finishes out. The Iron Shields, they do their part, preventing tragedy, saving lives from the start. Their silent strength, a beacon of hope, protecting all as they quietly cope. Everything is within a big city is pretty much ferried in and ferried out underground.
Great comment there, Rex. Very cool. All right. What do we got next?
Another one. A Garden in Chicago by Carl Shapiro. In the mid-city, under an oil sky, I lay in a garden of such dusky green, it seemed the dregs of the imagination, hedged round by elegant spears of iron fence. My face became a moon to absent suns. A low heat beat upon my reading face. There rose no roses in that gritty place, but blue-gray lilacs hung their tassels out, hard zinnias and ugly marigolds, and one sweet statue of a child stood by. A gutter of poetry flowed outside the yard, making me think I was a bird of prose, for overhead, bagged in a golden cloud, there hung the fatted souls of animals, wild, while at my eyes bright dots of butterflies turned off and on like distant neon signs. Assuming that this garden still exists, one ancient lady patrols the zinnias. She looks like George Washington crossing the Delaware. The janitor wanders to the iron rail. The traffic mounts bombastically out there. And across the street, in pitch black bar, with midnight mirrors, the professional takes her first whiskey of the afternoon. Ah, it is like a breath of country air.
Wonderful read there, Rex. I wasn't really expecting you to, since you had skipped the other poem, I figured you were going to skip that one too, but it was a great read. Yeah. Always happy to have an extra reason to hear your voice.
What other one?
What's that?
Oh, I missed that one. Oh. I didn't see that one.
Oh, no problem. Yeah, my original plan was to have, you know, both of the classic poems by Carl Shapiro read before going into the poems inspired by them. But like I said, I'm glad you read this one. I actually, having been to Chicago myself and having things that I, you know, appreciate about it, mainly the food and the museum, and things that I despise about it, mainly the fact that it's a big city, I really liked this poem in particular, and how it speaks on, and in fact, Carl Shapiro was a classic poet that I didn't know until just recently when I was looking for prompts. And anybody who hasn't read him, I highly recommend it. But yeah, I like how this speaks on that ability to find the beauty, small moments of beauty in the everyday ugliness of a big city. I particularly like A gutter of poetry flowed outside the yard, making me think I was a bird of prose, for overhead, bagged in a golden cloud, there hung the fatted souls of animals, while at my eyes bright dots of butterflies turned off and on like distant neon signs. Just amazing lines and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read. Your thoughts on this classic poem?
Well, I don't know how long ago it was, but it doesn't really matter because Chicago's been a pretty large city for, God, well over 100 years. The idea, though, finding something in the midst of the city itself that you can actually find a golden glow to actually give birth to a thought of butterflies that roll as neon lights. It hits on the idea of imagination in the moment, considering most big cities kind of offer up the ugly end of things, the way they're erected, built, the way everything is streaming around it. So you have to really dip in your imagination to find the an angle of thought to place within it.
I like that. And it looks like, from what I'm reading, great comment there, by the way, that the majority of his poetry was written between 1942 to 1966.
Ah, yes, the golden age of the mafia. Boy, Chicago is home to them since the beginning.
Yep, exactly. Great. Exactly, yep. All right, what do we got next, Rex?
Absinthe Garden by Betty Page.
All right. Moulin Rouge's absinthe, neon green, elegant booze, swings high from the roof, velvet rose petals, vines curving round, real tight ropes, smeared cherry kisses, shimmers confetti, fuzzy golden disarray, couples dance to fade, twirling to lush rooms, empty pink champagne bottles, unwrapped sweet truffles, pretty pink cherries, tossing aside lingerie, dressed up like geishas, kissing by starlight, bites Aphrodite's apples, tainted by fine men, drifting melodies, distant now festivities, way past 3 a.m. Time to go to bed, all of us queens and fine kings, Marie Antoinette pulls fierce all our strings, we're all mere marionettes holding gold scissors. End poem. What an amazing write by Betty here. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, the Moulin Rouge up top kind of hints at the idea of something a bit decadent, thrill-seeking. The absinthe all offers up the, all right, it's green fairy time. So the vividity grabs into it because you got red tight ropes, smear cherry kisses. So there's a lot of a little bit of play going on, and the thought of Marie Antoinette, the kings and queens, offers up a dabble of dipping back in time a bit and rolling in the decadence in the angle itself, the pink champagne bottles, the truffles. So it's just sounds like one big hookup party.
Very true. Great comment there, Rex. Yeah, I really like how she sets the atmosphere and the tone for the write with the first line, Moulin Rouge's absinthe, neon green, elegant booze, swings high from the roof. All the way through, wonderful imagery and metaphors. As always, she's got stunning 5-7-5 lines. I also particularly really like kissing by starlight, bites Aphrodite's apples, tainted by fine men. And then the end, pulls fierce all our strings. We're all mere marionettes holding gold scissors. And it's interesting how that speaks on the idea of a loss of power and having someone else be in control. And yet you hold the scissors yourself. And so there's the power that you have to release yourself, and yet you choose not to. So excellent write and very well done. And all right, what do we got next, Rex?
Chicago by Arla Boggs. When the furniture market died in Grand Rapids, and Grand Rapids used to be the center of it all, it died fast, never recovered. My older brother and sister arrived into this world, but I was taking my sweet time while my father represented Hitchcock Chair, a New England manufacturer, next to rooms featuring local craftsmen of Sly, Baker, and Whittacombe. At the end of each of those January days, he would tear home, only to find me still enjoying a warm and stressless life inside. I was 11 when my dad bought a line of decorative mirrors and expanded his offerings to include imported items handcrafted by Italians and Spaniards. By then, the January market shifted to the merchandise mart in Chicago, a mammoth 24-story high building built by JFK's father on profits from selling alcohol for medicinal purposes during Prohibition. Eventually, I started working in sales for the family business. Every year, on the last night before the market would close, father and his brother would park outside a liquor discounter, leave me inside our car to enjoy my warm and stressless life, and come out a half hour later to pack our trunk with a six-month supply of spirit, in memory, I guess, of Joseph P. Kennedy. Well, just as the whirl of sawmills became quiet in Michigan, so did the bright lights of Chicago eventually fade, giving way to the dry North Carolina backwoods of Hickory and High Point. For many years, sellers and buyers would come for what was new or hot, then visit textile mills to buy wholesale goods through, I don't remember my father or uncle filling their trunks with socks. There is a museum in Grand Rapids that displays the beauty of what once was Pulaski Days and Lithuanian festivals that remind us of woodworkers who brought their skills to a new world. I'll bet liquor discounters in Chicago still do a booming business, and merchandise mart showrooms still buzz with ever new items. Me? I raise a Pepsi to those hardy folks in the hills of Carolina.
Great read there, Rex. And I see here that Arla Barge got a well-deserved front page pick for this, right? Another one that has a great nostalgic feel to this, real depth in this, right? I like how it speaks on, like it takes us through a childhood into young adulthood and lessons learned. And the way perspectives change, you know, I like how this speaks on the whole idea of how, you know, during the innocence time of childhood, you observe what the adults do, but you don't. It doesn't really sink in until later in life that, you know, they're trying to survive in an ever-changing culture and economy and to take care of a family. I like how this pays tribute to changing times and to changing cities. It kind of makes me think of Superior, Wisconsin, where I used to live. A lot of the older houses are very close together because Superior being a port town and a railroad town, the houses were built together because it was at the time such a popular city for people to live in and to move to that they thought it would be much bigger than it became. But then as railroad and shipping became less prevalent, it didn't grow as much and things changed. I like this all the way through, but I like where he says, eventually, I started working in sales for the family business every year on the last night before the market would close, my father and his brother would park outside a liquor discounter, leaving me inside our car to enjoy my warm and stress-less life. Also, the mention of the museum. There is a museum in Grand Rapids that displays the beauty of once was Pulaski days and Lithuanian festivals that remind us of woodworkers who brought their skills to a new world. There's such an importance to museums because a lot of time that's all we have left of our history, of a town's and or city's history. So excellent, right, and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
Well, it does hit on that note of how places die because of maybe mismanagement or how other realms pop up. Because New England used to be the epicenter of grand furniture way back when, not anymore. You might still be able to find some of it. And then with the influx of Italian and Spanish woodworking, which and plus German, that did the capturing of people dying. And then down to the basics, the Carolinas are still working their magic with producing furniture, and then that runs across the country. So it's the sort of this glass dancer, me, I raise a Pepsi to those hardy folks in the hills of Carolina. It's a note to still being here all those decades later, while everyone else kind of, they had their point of note in time, but they outgrew it to the point where they no longer produce something that was special to that region.
I like that. Great observations, Eric. Very cool. All right, what do we got next?
Oasis of Serenity by Selena. That was yours.
Okie dokie. All right. Amid black coral concrete temples of industry, like oasis in a desert of subdued silk gray sand, exotic eyes, emerald green, sapphire blue, golden amber, flash sensuously above layers of smoky veils, flirting with our senses. These eyes seduced our souls, wooing us to paradisal places, havens in the heavens, where strokes of serenity soothe stunted senses. Tired from living in the weary world far below, where little gray people lead little gray lives, up where the boundless blue can breathe, air infused with a myriad fragrances, wafting, suspended on a magic carpet of blossoms. We can fly through cushions of cashmere clouds, peace and tranquility, slow waltz to their own tune here, far from the protrusive, pulsating pounding of the city, respite from regimented routine rejuvenate, our bosoms bursting with blissful emancipation from the humdrum ennui enveloping our existence. End poem. Just absolutely an amazing write by Stelina. And your thoughts, Rex?
It's lovely, but it is a point to note to how bad city life can be, because she hit that note of, little gray people lead little gray lives. And the funny part is, the only ones who get to enjoy this arena are the ones who actually live in the building. And it's even worse is the idea, if it's not tended properly, it too becomes a dead, graying respite like everything else. So you've got to spend a good deal of money making sure this is watered properly. You've got the right temperament, the right flowers, and everything else up here, where everybody else can look down on it and dream but it's the only little bit of peace and greenery you'll find in a city like this, which is kind of funny in and of itself.
Absolutely, and you're right. It does take a pointed look at the inner city life and how there are those who live in the higher up, and like almost like a hierarchy, which is such a shame. But I like how, you know, it speaks on finding that place of peace and serenity, getting away from it all, even if you can't get out of the city, but to find that green, that little piece of paradise that lets you escape from that overwhelming routine and busyness of city life. As always, she's just got beautiful imagery, wonderful use of alliteration. I like how she brings in the idea of almost like a sensuality that comes with taking in the gardens, taking in the little places, the places of nature, flirting with our senses, these eyes seduce our souls, wooing us to paradisal places, havens in the heavens where strokes of serenity soothe stunning senses. You know, it's always great if you can, you know, me anyways, if you can live in a small town or in the country and enjoy the beauty of nature. But, you know, if you live in a big city, I think it's important to, you know, have those ways to connect with nature, even if it's, you know, a city park or garden or house plants even. You know, I always kill my house plants, but I think they're a wonderful thing to have if you can manage to not be like me and keep them alive. But I like how this speaks on the idea of finding that connection with nature and finding that way to bring peace and balance to the spirit. So excellent write and very well done.
That's good.
And what
most places don't offer up something that they offer regimentation instead of something that actually appeals. You look at the gridlines, how a city's laid out, but they don't bother laying it. Go to Amsterdam. You've got all these canals, these little tidbits of greenery running through the entirety of the city that offers up something else besides the city itself, which kind of gives way to easy breathing, and the fact that there is something to see besides the ugly gray or glass-winded fromage of a spillage that walks through most large cities.
Oh, that's cool to learn. Very good point made there, Rex. And poor Stelina, she hears everybody else's comments, and then the internet drops just in commenting on her. But, well, I have to let Stelina know that was the most brilliant comment I ever made, and I'm so sorry she missed it.
She's going to go
really
back later and call you a liar.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, as always, Rex made a brilliant comment, and, well, as always, I was nice. So, I think.
It's because we didn't learn. You look at Greece, you look at Rome, you look at all across Europe, the older cities. They're all laid out with a little bit of beauty in mind, which includes greenery, trees, the thoughts of canals and other things that give the city some actual life besides tar and glass.
That is a really good point. And yeah, it used to be that architecture took nature into consideration. I mean, even oh gosh, who's that really famous architecture that's more modern? And he does some stuff in Wisconsin. Dang it, I'm so horrible at names. But anyways, there's this one famous, he built the house on the rock. You know who I'm talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah, he would oftentimes take into consideration nature when building Frank Lloyd Wright. He would often take into consideration nature when building. And I think that is a process that has been lost. So I'm really glad you brought that up, Rex, because, you know, there is an importance to find that connection and that balance between what man builds and what nature has already laid out for us. And so very cool. All right, what do we got next?
Walking the Stone Paths by S. Sharp. I walk paths cut through shades of green in spring, shades of brown in fall. Mount Bridgeport, crushed stone footpaths from now absent quarries embedded themselves into earthen tones. Large, calloused hands beat angry machinery, ignorant stone, on gray, overcast mornings, because the bills pile like mountains form on fine mahogany dining tables in new suburban digs somewhere outside of town. Trucks trundle under the stone chutes, fill themselves with earth, broken into manageable pieces, deliver where people leisure ride bikes, where couples walk hand in hand along paths where industrious people press stone into the cement between man-made ponds, where fish are delivered from faraway places to give people a sense of nature and peace. End quote.
Great read there, Rex. This is another one that has brilliant imagery. I like how it pays tribute to nature and to the beauty of it, but also reminds us that oftentimes it's the modern technology that helps to bring that to us and the hard work that brings it to us. It's a wonderful right, acknowledging the working men and women and all that they do. I really like the imagery of crushed stone footpaths from now absent quarries embedded themselves into earthen tones. That makes me think of, you know, we'd have the stone quarries, or however you pronounce it, like big piles of rocks. And my grandma used to take us to them to gather rocks and stones to put in her garden and to build a wall. And she would, you know, call it the rock shop. And she would tell us that we're going to go shopping for rocks, even though obviously we never paid for them. We just went there and picked them up. But wonderful lines all the way through. I really like also trucks trundle under the stone chutes, fill themselves with earth, broken into manageable pieces to deliver where people leisure ride bikes, where couples walk hand in hand. And that's a wonderful reminder that a lot of what we come to enjoy and appreciate is brought to us by those who work with their calloused hands. And, you know, so just an excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
It drops a bit of history and a bit of urban planning from that history. The thought of Mount Bridge Park, I just looked it up. It used to be a limestone quarry. It's 26 acres. They turned into a bit of a urban landscape with the ponds, the zen atmosphere, the 2 miles of paths, and metal-graded walkways, gravel trails. So it's quite a bit, you know, ducks and fish. And you climb the hill up to the point, you get to a place where you fly kites in summer, or you sled in the snow in winter. So that was taking, because the limestone quarry, that would have been the place where they used where they drew all the brick itself to make the buildings downtown. So actually a nice unplanned and then planned bit of reality in the midst of that concrete jungle itself. So nicely done there, Scott. I like that.
Absolutely. And I like that you brought up that the history that he brings into this, right? Very cool.
Well, because the calloused hands walks back to the fact that they had to mine the limestone to begin with and then turn that quarry into something else.
And that is a really good point. It really makes you think about how hard they worked in order to, move that line and break and move that limestone. So, very cool. All right, what do we got next?
We got The Garden by After the Fire. Yours.
All right. Flower blooms don't define the garden. The soil must be seeded, fertilized, and cultivated. Roots watered, weeds pulled, aphids fumigated. Plenty of sun and tender care. A poem is its own garden. Flowers of imagery and metaphor merely draw the eye. But the true gardener knows that the substance lies in the tending of the soil, the strength found in a firm stem and secure, healthy roots. Anyone can appreciate the beauty of a blooming flower, but only a true poet knows the innate value of the seeds, and he shall value the garden long after the petals have fallen away. End poem. What a beautiful write, a wonderful use of extended metaphor. And Rex, I imagine that as both a gardener and a poet, you can appreciate the message in this poem. So your thoughts?
It's a bite at two ends. Flowers bloom. Flower blooms don't define the garden. Yes and no. Because you need the hard work going into it. But it does define the garden when the time comes, but you're also on the back end. And he should value the garden long after the petals have fallen away. Yes, because you need that to be tended because it's got to be put away for the winter, mulched and trimmed, nipped, cut, whatever, depending on the flowers you got. And again, got to be soil, fertilized, cultivated, yes. Watered, weeds pulled, aphids fumigated. True, aphids will eat everything. Sun and tender care, yes. But I like to draw the poem as its own garden, the very same thing. And it hits on that note, but only a true poet knows the innate value of the seeds. They both work. You need the seeds to actually let the garden grow, but you also need the seeds of thought to actually make the poem as well. So, nicely done there. Thank you, David.
Absolutely. Yeah, I like the imagery and metaphor in this and the comparison to the idea of gardening and writing poetry. And I like how you mentioned, Rex, that the flowers, they're beautiful, they're important, or whatever it is you grow in your garden. But there's also the importance of, the taking care of the soil. And I really like this all the way through, but, especially those end lines where he says, anyone can appreciate the beauty of a blooming flower, but only a true poet knows the innate value of the seed, and he shall value the garden long after the petals have fallen away. So I like that. That speaks to me on the idea, like if you think of all poetry, the idea that after everyone, you've stopped getting the comments and the likes on the poem, You know that the seed has been planted. You have created something, and it has affected people who look upon it. I also like how he goes into attention to detail, like, you know, about gardening, like roots watered, weeds pulled, aphids fumigated. So he reminds us that both poetry and gardening happens with hard work, that it isn't just some magical process where you snap your fingers. So excellent write and very well done. And what do you got for us next, Rex?
Located by Thomas Bean. They never let you forget where you come from. The stamp of location follows you as if a social GPS got you before birth. And once located, defined by longitude and attitude, it would be indelicate to allow you to grow larger than this defined space. Choice is never yours, or the choice is never obvious. We forget how we create, explicate, fabricate, and dedicate our being. What is important? Let them never forget that they were graced by a phenomenon, expanded by the splendor, made larger by wonder when you arrived. In poems.
Oh, great. Great read as always, Rex. I love the imagery in this and the message. You know, from the very opening lines, they never let you forget where you came from. It really speaks on the idea of finger pointing and judgment and the thought that of the judgment of cultural and social status judgment that oftentimes you can't escape where you came from no matter how hard you try, because there are always those people pointing their fingers and reminding us. I really like as if a social GPS got you before birth and once located, defined by longitude and attitude, it would be indelicate to allow you to grow larger than this defined space. You know, it's such a shame that we put people, other people and ourselves in boxes and expect them to stay there. So excellent write and very well done. And your thoughts, Rex?
The choice being never obvious. And I say, if you concede that fact, then you'll be left in that box. So the idea is that back end. Let them never forget that they were graced by a phenomenon expanded by the splendor made larger by wonder when you arrived. The obvious note, hey, you know what? They can be snide little crass bastards, but in the end, if you keep to yourself, and who and what you are, where you came from really doesn't matter.
You know what? I really like that you said that. That was a great comment all the way through, but I did like that you ended it with the thought that where you come from doesn't matter, and so therefore other people's thoughts shouldn't necessarily matter. What matters is you, your thoughts and moving forward yourself. Great comment. And what do you have for us next, Rex?
The Mess of a Garden. My time, Tom. That was yours.
All right. The Mess of a Garden by Time Teller. By the rubble sits a patch of Vallis perennis daisy, smiling at the cold gray January day. Scrambling on the lower edges of the rubble is Stella Medea chickweed, its pretty white flowers trying their best to show themselves. At the top of the rubble, a nettle, Utica diachea, stands proud like a mountain climber having reached the summit. Towards the back, dark side of the rubble, Symphaton comfy is growing and trying to flower as if in denial of the season. There's a patch of common grass on which the rubble stands, and mixed in with the daisies are meadow buttercups, renicolors, iris siberkia, and Alchemilla mollis form clumps of green leaves and orange berries, which later in the year give rise to lime yellow flowers, and surrounding it all a pink crane's bill geranium that takes over the chore of providing color. To the sides of this heap, aconites are flowering and the green stems of expectation glistening in the morning frost that are galanthos snowdrops. At some point in the spring, the sweet scent of wood ruff tumbles over the rocky mess as early flowering abrasia burst forth and sturdy soldiers like stems of a wild gladioli hang their flags of vibrant mauve above the white and bluey purple flowers. Come summer, helianthos and heliums spring up their reds and oranges among greens and white ornamental grasses with the grave branched stems of sea hollies, terracotta blitzes, and drifts provided by enchinsias and achalias. In the background, cardoons and lavender and squares show off their stature. Tall verbascums, silver leaves spring up all over, and on closer inspection, mice can be seen to jump from stem to stem, not too far from the rubble is a pond, with a boy sat still gazing into his reflection. And sometimes, when you enter this area, perhaps in March or April, there are small people dancing around among the crocuses, the pale mauve, wild, self-seeded, and the larger, darker purples and white of the cultivated varieties. And now when you look back at the rubble, you see their door and know this garden is well tended. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
The rubble is the main emphasis here, because it's dropped in by the rubble. There was low edges of the rubble, top of the rubble, dark side of the rubble. It's all that's there, and it's in your face for a reason because of everything else that surrounds it. You can. It's the idea of taking that which is considered rubble, or the fact that it is rubble and it's going nowhere, the idea of actually making the season around the rubble, taking the rubble out of context for the season itself, from spring through summer, because she rolls through spring and into summer with the different sets of flowers when they bloom. And the idea is offering up, hey, even in the ugliness of a pile of rubble, probably broken rocks, bricks, or other detritus that's gathered in the place or had been dug out because there was need for the pond. Now you've got an area that goes full bloom with a number of things, even moss that grows on the rubble. So the rubble is no longer rubble, but it is a cubicle for everything and anything that blooms and adds a bit of color to that dark, dark gray patch of what was considered unnoteworthy in its retrospect, except being a pile of shit next to a pond.
I like that. And yes, there is that whole idea, as you said, of the beauty that comes forth from that pile of rubble that was only seen as garbage and nothing more. I really like the imagery in this. I like how he used the scientific terms for many of the flowers. I get the impression that Time Teller does gardening or has an interest in gardening. Wonderful imagery throughout. I like how he brings in the little mice and the little people and the idea of the magic within a garden and the life that just keeps bringing forth. I always really liked, you know, like I said, I'm not good with plants or gardening myself, but I've lived in houses where there's those flowers like that keep growing back every year. And one house I lived in, every year we'd get the pink bleeding heart flowers, little heart, I think they're called bleeding hearts anyways. They got like the flowers themselves are actually shaped like little hearts. And they're just so beautiful to look at. I really like the imagery in this, but especially when he mentions wild gladiola hang their flags of vibrant mauve above the white and bluey purple flowers, and then terracotta blitzes and drifts provided by Ignatius and Achilles in the background, cardoons and lavender and squares show off their stature. I like how he gives a personality to the different flowers. Very cool. Excellent write and well done. And what do we got next, Rex?
Valhalla Calls by Simon Guest. Steel clashes with steel. Men push, cut, and slice. Spears glance cheeks, their points piercing battle-hardened skulls. Wall maidens stand side by side with their men, screaming battle chants, blood-soaked blades wailing like possessed banshees. Bring forth fire and brimstone, Valhalla calls all warriors. Wolves howl their acceptance, sword, shield, and spear in hand, teeth bared, in battle we die. And poem.
Wonderful read there, Rex. And this was a carryover from Solace of Shadows. I this was one that I had asked if we could read it, and then we didn't get a chance to get to it. It fit really well with the song prompts. And, you know, I always enjoy rites that have to do with mythology, with history, and especially the Viking mythology. I thought this was an epic, dark rite with strong, visceral imagery, and that speaks on warriors the dying bravely in battle and the hope of going to Valhalla. I particularly like the end stanza with bring forth fire and brimstone. Valhalla calls all warriors born. Wolves howl their acceptance. Wonderful lines and very well done. And Rex, you did a wonderful read of that. Your thoughts?
Actually, I liked it. Kind of blunt and to the point with the thought of battle itself. And the call them war maidens, standing side by side, wailing like possessed banshees. That kind of hits on the notion of what was it? There was another. What they used to call those warriors that were that seemed to be running amok. Oh, I can't think of the word for it now. Damn it. Anyway, kind of hints at that note because of those who walk in the battle with the knowledge that death comes to all, yet they seem impervious to everything in the moment except the spilling of blood.
Yeah, so it's that whole idea of just that bloodlust, that rage that comes forth, that desire for blood. And I know what you're talking about, but I can't think of the word either. I can totally see that.
What the hell is that?
Berserkers.
Yes.
That's it. Berserkers.
Yep. Berserkers. Yes.
Yes.
It seemed they were in a trance-like state, so I kind of ran on that note that were they taking some form of herbal concoction back then, which actually put them into this state of being?
Oh, wow. So it was kind of like the idea of a drug that kind of alters the mind, a substance that alters the mind.
Yep.
Very cool. Very cool. All right. Shall we try to fit one more right in?
There you go. Valhalla's Open Gate by All Seasons Verse.
All right. Bloodstained of war sought will a dying warrior's chill. Onyx-winged Valkyrie watch. She waits above the battleground hill. Viking queen in full battle armor gear. Her enemy in a deadly blood spill. Ebony wings will guide the honored chosen. Wings swiftly and warmly open, unfrozen. To Valhalla's open gate, where Odin's bountiful table awaits. End poem. And your thoughts, Rex?
This picture reminds me of, there was a show of, I guess, 10 years ago called Vikings. She reminds me of Agatha. Ragnar's wife, first wife. Anyway, I like the notion to this with the thought of the Valkyrie, and then offering up her being the Valkyrie watching, waiting for that special one to be rewarded in the taking. Because not every warrior who fell on the field got taken by Valkyrie. Only those deemed worthy got to make that trip to Valhalla and sit at Odin's table to feast and drink to the war, to the battles they waged.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that point up there because, yeah, Valkyries had an important job, you know, in the mythology. And as you said, the idea that they took the chosen to the halls of Valhalla. You know, this great rhyme, wonderful imagery. Again, just, you know, I like that this is an epic rite, but not really long. You know, great imagery. I like that it delves into the Norse mythology, and particularly enjoyed the onyx-winged Valkyrie's watch. She waits above the battleground hill. So there's the idea of her place established, waiting to do her job. So excellent write. Very well done. And this has been a great show tonight. Thank you, as always, Rex, for being a wonderful co-host. Thank you very much to Selena and Hats for hanging on the board, and Babbler. Thank you to everyone who wrote for the show, is listening now, or will be listening later. We truly appreciate you all. And Rex, I know you need some more rights for Sunday's show. So what's your contest you got running for that?
David Crosby, who just passed, got some songs, some birds, Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, and his solo career.
Very cool. I'm looking forward to that. And, of course, make sure everyone to join us 10 p.m. tonight for Fill My Eyes and Company with Open Poetry. And have a good night, everyone.
Good night, all.